We're here.
I wish I could give this feeling. I wish I could give this feeling.
In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
What up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Corner Podcast. Kel Dansby here with the old man, Andreas Hale. And today, it's show number two this week, and we are talking boxing on this show. It was a crazy weekend in boxing, mainly because we had the fight between Kell Brook and Terrence Crawford. But a lot went on around that we're going to touch on during this show today. And then, of course, we have to talk a little bit about Katie Taylor, because she put on a show herself earlier in the day on Saturday that we cannot skip over. Talk a little bit about where the women stand on the pound for pound rankings as well. But first, Dre, a new versus has been confirmed. We thought this whole time it was going to be T.I. versus Jeezy. And we're like, okay, we broke it down. We talked about it when it was speculation around it, who would win. Now it's switched up a bit. Now it's Jeezy versus Gucci Mane, the fake Gucci, however you want to put it, clone Gucci. We have both of them allegedly showing up at the same place to have this battle. Is there a chance that this goes horribly wrong?
Of course there is. For the record, you remember I said I didn't give a shit about Jeezy and T.I.? I really don't care about this one.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you finally give a shit about this.
No, I will not even. The only reason why I watch is for shenanigans. Because, you know, somebody died. You know what I'm saying? This is like 50 Cent and Ja Rule having a versus, and they stick them in the same room together and be like, what could go wrong? Like,
someone legit died in this beef.
Yeah, like there was a murder in this feud, right? Like, yeah. I mean, look, man, if people can bury the hatchet, okay. But what happens if they play one of their diss songs?
Oh, I fully believe Gucci would play a diss song. The other one got to play the diss song. You just got to go back and forth. I don't think I know more than five Gucci Mane songs, though.
I mean, I know
like Lemonade. In a catalog. Yeah, I know Lemonade. No Lemonade.
Listen, I've never played
the
Gucci
Wayne
fan.
Verse. That Wayne verse where he had the feature on. It's fucking crazy. That's all I really know.
Yeah, I don't.
I know.
Care.
I know five.
I can't remember the other three. This is one versus that I'm just like, you can count me out because I don't care.
I was looking forward to T.I.
I wasn't. Sorry.
T.I.'s catalog is strong.
I was looking. I told you why I was looking for. I was like Jeezy. Jeezy's catalog. I'm just never been a big fan. And people get mad. It's like you didn't like Jeezy. No, I was not a big Jeezy. Just because y'all bought that shit.
101 was legit. Everyone got to admit that.
I don't.
What? Again, spoiler alert, the second half of this hip-hop conversation is about classic rap albums that some people may not consider classic, but they are. And one that is never in question is TM-101. That is a classic rap album.
Yeah, no, it's not.
What?
Why
switch places. It's like Freaky Friday in here.
No, it's not. Why is this a classic album?
What do you mean why it's a classic album?
Why?
Every track was dope on that album.
No,
it had four singles.
So as well, a lot that of were all hot. Singles.
Yeah, okay, I'm just saying. All four singles hit. Debut album. A lot of debuts hit the world like, you know, a firestorm. This is one of them. A lot of that music holds up today and people bump it.
Not
what
me.
Do you mean? That album was crazy.
Sorry.
Manny Fresh came through and blessed it. That was the perfect storm for Jeezy. Like, it was, of course, cocaine rap. Now, I think that was maybe him and T.I., but I'd say that was probably one of the last times Atlanta was really commercial with talking about selling drugs instead of doing drugs.
Yeah. Nope.
Wow, 101 isn't a classic?
Mm-mm.
You are bugging. He's going to have to play half that album in his verses, too, by the way.
Sure, but...
He's going to win this by a landslide, though, so I'm not even
concerned. Here's my thing about Jeezy, and many people won't agree. And look, I'm totally fine with this. I don't give a fuck. There are so many Dope Boys rappers who have been better than Jeezy. And what Jeezy has rapped about has been rapped about better by other Dope Boy rappers. So that album, which has one theme throughout, being a Dope Boy, is not the best Dope Boy rapper album out there. And we've talked about this. I don't recall you bringing up Jeezy. So how can this be a classic album when his one gimmick...
I definitely brought up Jeezy.
Did you? I can't recall.
It was like right after Push I brought up Jeezy.
Did you? I can't remember.
You can't have a Dope Boy conversation without the Snowman. Listen. I was in New York over the summer and people were rocking Snowman t-shirts.
Yeah, I don't care. That doesn't make a classic album. That makes nice clothes for a week. A lot of people wore G-Unit tank tops. That didn't make the G-Unit the best group of all time.
It's unfortunate.
I've heard other people, like, there are very few times where I've heard a Jeezy verse with somebody else where I was like, Jeezy killed that person on that song.
Wow. No, I can't think of one.
Yeah.
I mean, so, Plies killed him on his own track. Plies came through and did something dirty.
Do you know how embarrassing that is? To get outdone
by Plies? Yeah, that's tough.
And this man has a classic album, is what you're telling me?
Okay. He does. But I'm just saying, Plies washed him. 2 Chainz came through and washed him on the track.
How does this man have a classic
Jay
album?
Washed him on a track.
How has he got a classic album? He's consistently getting washed in his own songs.
We're talking about features and like different tracks.
I'm just saying.
Again, a lot of those aren't on 101, so I don't know what to tell you. 102, 103? Yeah, people started sliding through and washing him on his own tracks.
I mean, were the bars that incredible? Did I miss something? Because I don't hear what y'all been hearing.
Yeah, that shit hit the earth like a comet. That's like saying, I don't want to jump too far ahead because I have like a full list for these should have been classics. Like I got like 3 of them. You had a list of 6. But it's one of those regional joints that drops and you're just like, yo, like it makes you feel like the culture of that city at that time.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I really felt like motherfuckers thought they were from Atlanta, like on some Snowman shit. Like, and you could be from bumfuck Montana, but it just transported you with that feel.
Okay. If you say so.
Where were you around this time? Like, where were you writing around this time? I hope you didn't have to review this album.
No, I didn't review this album.
My God.
I think I reviewed the Doug Motivation 2.
You would have dropped the ranking a ton with your review.
Oh, I mean, listen, true story. Thug Motivation, the second 102, what year was that? 2006?
Seven?
They had me review that, and I was like, this is a bad, for the source. And I was like, this is a bad idea. And they were like, no, you should review it. I was like, are you sure about this? I'm not a Jeezy fan. No, you have a real, go ahead, review it. I reviewed it. I shitted on it. They changed my review.
What?
Yep. It's like, you can't do this. Label's going to be pissed. I was like, I try to tell y'all. Like, I was trying to be very transparent in saying, give this review to somebody else. Because if you give it to me, what you're doing is eventually is telling somebody, especially somebody like me who loves like underground hip hop and doesn't give a shit about mainstream Dope Boy rap, especially from a rapper who I don't think is that good. You give me a license to just shit on it. And yes, there's going to be a lot of cats, backpackers, quote unquote, who are going to agree with me, but that's not the source's audience. You guys are trying to go wide. Don't do this. They're like, no, go ahead and review it. I was like, okay. I reviewed that shit, shitted on it. They changed my fucking review. He's like, this is a good business. I was like, I warned you. It wasn't good business to give me that review. You should have know your audience. There's certain things I just won't give to certain people. As an editor, like, if you don't watch women's boxing, I'm not going to have you write, interview, like, Terry Harper. Because you don't know who that is. And I'm like, why would I make you do it? Well, then do the research. No. You should know your subject.
Sucks, by the way, Terry Harper broke her hand.
Yeah, but no.
Nonetheless. So crazy. So 101 starts off Thug Motivation 101. then standing ovation. All right, cool. But Gangsta Music, Let's Get It. And then what? Followed by Go Crazy, Last of a Dying Breed, My Hood. Those are the first 8 songs on that album.
Yeah, I don't give a shit about any of them, except for Go Crazy, because Don Cannon destroyed that beat.
Man, he destroyed it, and then what?
Yeah, I'm cool. Let's Get Listen, It. You will never convince me.
Get your mind
that
right.
You will never. Listen, I can go. If you guys want to say Jeezy had a great album and I loved it, cool. Classic? No.
Soul Survivor.
I hated that song.
Oh my god, I'm losing it right now. Wow, how did I not know this about you? Well, that explains this whole Versus thing then. So I don't know who you think is gonna win.
I don't care.
I don't know any Gucci albums that might be classic. I can't believe you said 101's not classic.
It's not, but a dog, it's
Gucci's
not
gonna be playing mixtape shit. I don't know. This battle may not be for me, man, but I'm tuning in.
For you to say this is a classic album, what's so groundbreaking about this album?
I didn't say it had to be groundbreaking. It's strong from
give me
front
something
to back, and I explained to you.
That's a good album,
it's
right?
It's one of those albums where even if you weren't from Atlanta, I had never been to Atlanta in my life. A lot of people had never been to Atlanta in their life, and it made you feel as though you were in that environment, like you got a taste of that environment. It's what I hope people, and I feel like a lot of people don't and don't even open up to, do when they listen, not comparing the level of classics here either, by the way, but when they listen to Illmatic, I hope people go into it and leave with the feeling of, I know what the fuck New York is about. Like Nas made me feel like I was in New York and I was a fucking New Yorker. I want to go outside and put my Bally's on. Like, you want to go outside and wear velour with fucking Tim's, like Constructs, and walk down the block. You want that feeling. Nas painted that picture. He gave you that feeling. To me, Jeezy gave you that, yo, super Atlanta trapper feeling. Hmm. And that's why it was a classic album when it dropped.
Yeah. I can listen to people say, oh, I really like that album. It's a really good album. I can say it's a 4. I can listen to all that. I can't listen to the classic talk. Because for me, there's nothing groundbreaking about that album. There's nothing that's... Jeezy's not a great rapper. Jeezy had some solid production. Jeezy didn't do anything different than anybody else was doing, better than anybody else was doing it. To call it a classic album... Like, do you think the Game's documentary is a classic? Okay, so the fact that just breathed really hard about that, but you can say Jeezy's
tough
a classic?
I would say yes. We're really shitting on my list coming up here in a second. Yes, I would say the documentary is a classic album, which is going to make something I say on my list portion here in a second even more wild. But yes.
Okay.
Yes, I would say that is a classic. A lot of people's best albums or quote-unquote classics are their first albums. I mean, so like, yeah. I would give the 50 album, which is technically a second because Power of Dollar's first, but you know, his major label debut would be his best and classic album. Game, same thing with documentary. So yeah, it is a classic album.
Yeah, I don't think it's a classic album.
You don't think Games is either?
Mm-mm, nope.
Boy.
I think it's a good album.
Bad. I know that you're an old man already. When you truly become an old man and someone gives you the bag to like teach like a course at a college part time, to be like, oh, Professor Hale, they're going to have you teach like some wild ass course and people are going to be writing papers and you're just going to be giving everyone B pluses. Like, I don't grade on a curve.
That's why I won't be a teacher.
You're just a professor of something and just shitting on people.
Listen.
And they'd be like, I never got in a B in my life. You're like, oh, take this 89%.
People will say, take this and not me saying Game doesn't have a classic and say he's shitting on Game. No, I think Game had a really, 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 really good album. But it's not a classic. I don't think there's nothing in that out. There's nothing, not nothing. There are some really good moments in that album. Really yeah. good moments. I think it's a very strong 4.5 album if you want to go that route. But a 5? A classic? Because what I end up doing is like, does it compare to Illmatic? Does it? No.
Okay, but all 5-star matches aren't created equal as well. Like,
no, but if
every
but if,
5-star match isn't Steamboat Flair.
Which is true, but If I can't put you in the same category as it, then you're not a classic. If I don't feel anything, because what it's a feeling, it's also what it does. It also captures an element of time, and it changes something in hip hop. Game didn't do any of those things for me. Jeezy didn't do any of those things for me. So if you could say I really enjoyed this album, I think it's not a universal classic, flat out. If it's your personal classic, like for you, I know like Joe Budden and shit, but yeah, that's cool.
In which I think he has classic mixtapes, not a like, classic album.
I think that's cool, but when you say it's definitely a classic, I don't see it.
Fuck, that's tough. You are tough. I mean, again, that's what brings up our next topic is classic rap albums that people don't consider an instant classic, but should be. Like, yo, you know what? That is really a classic. And people are like, and it really doesn't get its just due. You dropped a list on Twitter earlier. I'm trying to find the list. Do you have the list?
I just know. I can tell you it off the top of my damn head.
Okay. Oh, I got it off rip. What albums, and your shit was, I don't want to be derogatory, super backpacky, which isn't bad because I like a lot of those albums, but you didn't diversify your list at all. But what albums are classics that you think people don't give that title to?
So the reason why my, like, I appreciate your slander. The reason why my list was super quote-unquote backpacky is because in the late 90s and early 2000s, rap that was considered backpacky was never getting the credit it deserved. So that's why my list consists of a lot of albums that were completely overlooked by the masses because they didn't have radio hits. And they weren't deemed classics. So my list is one, Like Water for Chocolate, Common. It's a classic album. I don't give a fuck what anybody says.
It's not even this. Okay.
It's not even what?
I'm not sure if that's his best album. I mean, we're not doing best.
Look,
we're
a lot of people classics.
So that's
gonna
his
go
third
with B.
best album.
Oh, yeah, okay. People are going to go with B. Okay. People are going to go with B as this classic album.
That's his number one, correct.
Yeah. But I challenge
more than one classic.
Go listen to Like Water for Chocolate. Because the album is almost 20 years old. With Dilla production, with the things that he was doing with Primo on the album, it's a classic album. Two, Talib Kweli and Mos Def are Black Star. It's kind of the reason why I got into hip-hop journalism, because they 3.5 that shit in the source.
That was it. That set you...
That set me off. It set me off because there's no way in hell that Mos Def and Talib Kweli... Redefinition, Brown Skin Lady, Thieves in the Night. That shit, the lyricism on there and High Tech's production was incredible. It also busted the doors wide open for Ruckus Records. And that's when you saw the underground permeating into the mainstream. And if there wasn't a Black Star and a Talib Kweli and Mos Def being as successful as they were, I'm not sure if we even have a Kanye West.
Oof. Okay, that's fair. I mean, we still have a Dilla, so that
yes, we have a Dilla. But if we didn't have a Dilla, we wouldn't have a Kanye. But the reason why I say this is because Kanye, when he first came in with Kweli's Dropout, who did he reach out to? Kweli.
Most we might not have had Kanye the rapper.
No,
we may have still had Kanye the producer.
Yes, correct. But next album. This is debatable for a lot of people, but the first time I heard it, and it still holds this day, is Blue in Exile's Below the Heavens. To me, it's not very much debate. Like, when I heard this album, I was like, what is this? Because there was no preconceived notion. Nobody knew who the hell Blue was. Nobody had a clue who Exile was. And this album is incredible. It's a classic.
Okay.
4, Slum Village Fantastic Volume 2. The production that Dilla delivers on this album by itself is what makes it a classic. Listen, Slum Village before Elzai was not even the most super lyrical group. But if you listen to the way that Dilla chopped things like on songs like Players or Concrete Gardens or Climax might be one of the best girl hip hop songs of all time.
And, I mean, I like the song. I'm not arguing with you.
I'm just saying, in my opinion, for a group that nobody had ever heard of, play Climax, like especially nowadays, play Climax with somebody who has no idea who Slum Village is and watch how they react to it. Every girl I've ever has ever heard that song, go, ooh, what's this? That's what Dilla did better than anybody. Five, Little Brothers of the Listening. This won't be debatable for me.
I mean, that's your lane. Of course.
I mean, it completely thrust Ninth Wonder out and Fontaine and Big Pooh out there. Another album that completely came out of nowhere. The reason why I call it a classic, and it might not even be their best album. That might be The Minstrel Show. But the thing about The Listening was, for a lot of people, it brought us back to hip hop who left it because we felt like it was super jiggy by 2003. Mm. And when Little Brother came in, who were the name is the descendants of De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest, Jungle Brothers, it gave us that feeling back. Because Ninth's production was incredible, and we had never heard somebody rap like Fonte, especially somebody from North Carolina. Yeah. Rally? Yeah. So am I missing one?
And now it's a hotbed of hip hop talent. It's crazy.
Right. It all came from a group called Little Brother. Yep. Is that all my albums, or am I missing one?
You were missing one. You had six, but I'm not sure what the other one.
Oh, I didn't actually. I didn't put Little Brother on that list. It was Foreign Exchanges Connected. Foreign Exchanges Connected, because I think for a lot of people, the Little Brothers, The Listening was already a classic. So it wasn't like something that wasn't considered a classic by people that heard it. Foreign Exchanges Connected is a debatable classic for a lot of people, and I completely understand why. But what Nicolay and Fonte did over the internet back in the day, before people were making albums without even meeting each other, like Nicolay was in the Netherlands, Fonte was in North Carolina, and they made this album. And I remember the day that I got it, I was like, what the hell is this? And it's got like the smoothest cuts on there, and the rhymes are dope, but then there's like singing and shit. And then Foreign Exchange became what they are today. So that album is on there. And the last one is J Live's All of the Above. And that another album, New York rapper, underground, didn't have a radio hit, but if you listen to that album front to back, there's like nothing to skip. And J Live is an incredible lyricist, self-produced a vast majority of it.
And I love when albums are like that.
Yeah, and it came out of, for a lot of people it came out of nowhere. It didn't for me, because I heard the best part before it. So yeah, those are my six. But the reason why I say this is because a lot of people have never heard those albums.
I think that's where a lot of it comes from, right? A lot of this comes from people just never heard the albums. So it's just like the people who have kind of consider it a classic, but there's so many people who haven't listened to the albums that it's, you know, it flies under the radar. So that's why I really like this topic and this list when I saw it on Twitter. Okay, yours was super backpacky, but I like it. I mean, it's on brand. I feel like I had to go and like give you some shit that was on brand for me. So let me start off with my backpacky shit to just, no pun intended, backpack on your list. So I also have Mos Def, Quali, Black Star. That's on mine. Cool, right? I think that's a universal album that is a classic, though. Like, you see people shitting on that?
Duh, I told you it got 3.5 stars in the source.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of mics. Shit. It was unappreciated when it came out.
3.5?
Do you know that's ridiculous. That's like saying Clerks. That's like saying Clerks isn't an amazing movie. Oh, like, it wasn't spectacular. Exactly. It wasn't understood necessarily when it came out. It's just a cult classic now. Like, no one now is going to say it's not a classic. That's how I feel about Black Star. But I threw it on the list because it was on your list. Like, now looking back, if someone says it's not a classic, you just got to walk up and slap the shit out of them like Bernie Mac in Head of State. Because it's almost undeniable that that's a classic. But I put it on the list. Another one in the same mold before I go off on a tangent is The Roots' Tipping Point. The Roots have better albums, right? I'm not saying that this is their only classic.
That's a good one.
But I think this is an album that people overlook in their catalog. I really like Tipping Point as album.
This is one I won't argue with you on, because you're right. It may not be The Roots' best album. I think Things Fall Apart will always be their best album, in my opinion.
I agree. Yeah.
But that album gets overlooked because The Roots have put up so much quality music. So yeah, I get
so much heat. But Tipping Point, I think, should be a classic. Now,
holy shit.
Now it's time. No, I was going to troll you with Ray Shremmer, even though that shit is fuego. But no, I'm not. I'm going to leave that alone. Next up is not that controversial, actually. I think Prodigy, HNIC, is a classic album.
I don't think it's a classic, but I can see why. Because the Alchemist production was fantastic, and then Prodigy just killed it.
Yeah. Havoc's incredible on the boards.
Crazy.
Yeah, like, it gets overlooked to me. I think it's a class. It's one of my favorite hip-hop albums of all time. So I'm biased. But I also think people don't give it its just due. I think people give higher regard to the Mobb Deep album than they do this album.
Yeah.
And I prefer HNIC. But I'm probably in a minority. To me, that's a classic. Here goes the three random ones.
Oh, God.
And then one, I don't know how people feel about this, but this is something I don't hear too much about because it's general. It's kind of new in the scope of hip hop. But J. Cole, 2014 Forest Hill Drive. Classic. If Cole has a classic, that is it.
That's
and to
true.
Me, that is his classic.
That's his best album. Well, yep.
Drake has two classics. Well, Kendrick has two, maybe three. This is Cole's undeniable classic, and then we start arguing.
I'll say it's deniable, but I can see the argument. I personally enjoy Born Sinner, but I can see why people like Forest Hills Drive. I played Born Sinner front to back a lot. That was an album that I was like, I can't even skip a song on here. But I still wouldn't call it a classic. But so I get it. Forest Hills Drive, from the opening to the subject matter. Yeah. Even the people that say Cole is boring, I was like, you can find a moment on there that you like. That's a good album.
I think this was his coming out party. Damn, I thought I had two more, but it's three. This one you'll definitely agree with. Wale, Album About Nothing.
Yes, I almost put that on my list.
Already, it is a classic album. And people just love to hate on Wale and shit on him. That is a classic album.
That album is, it's a weird album because when it hit, people are like, this is cool. And for the people who liked Wale with like the 10 Deep mixtapes, that was the Wale that I dug. Not that I ever didn't dig Wale, but that album was like everything, all his previous work was supposed to be. Like the Middle Finger song, that's... like that's like the epitome. That's like peak Wale, like finding himself. And you'll get no debate from me. Like, I played that album recently, and then having Seinfeld on now, I'm like, come on, man,
this shit was great. Like, and being, I'm a Seinfeld fan. Like, it hit his core audience perfectly. So if there's a reason why it's a classic album, it's because sometimes, if say like you have a favorite rapper or you go to a rapper for something, and you listen to the album, rarely do they give you everything you want from them in one project. They might fuck around and pull a Jay-Z and give you a Sunshine. You know, where you're like, fuck, what is going on here? Like, you know, they'll throw something in there. Even Lupe has fucked me up from time to time. Throwing some random shit on there. Like, Lupe, I think The Cool is a classic album. I don't really need Gold Watch. Like,
I like Gold shit, Watch. Like,
I don't like Gold. Like, that's why
I don't love it, but
yeah, like, to me, like, don't fuck up the album, man. So when you look at it, Wale delivered the perfect album for his audience. There's not one track on there where you'd be like, really? You reach for this shit? No, none of that. You went for Wale, you got Wale. Track one through whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's classic. My last two were crazy and off the wall. Next one, Mace Feels So Good. I'm going, fuck, you hate the shiny suit stuff? You hate all that shit? Mace Feels So Good, front to back, classic.
You're 20, serious?
24 Hours to Live, amazing.
You're serious?
Play a hater. Yeah, play, come on.
You're serious? This is a classic album?
Play a hater might be on Big Joy. I forgot the one that's on Mace's album. It'll come to me in a second. But, yeah, it's a classic album. Even with the Jiggy shit. It is a classic Jiggy era album,
man.
And then it's just a classic album. Total, the Total track is fucking bonkers on there. Jay-Z had one of his, I love that Jay-Z guest verse with him and C's on the track.
You're serious?
I'm dead serious. Mace Feels So Good is a classic album.
Feels so,
I listen to it at least once every other month.
First and foremost, the album's called Harlem World.
Harlem World.
Feels So Good was the first single.
Yes, Harlem World. Blue cover, Harlem World tattoo on his shoulder. I get it. Yes, Harlem World. I don't know why it feels so good with stuck in my head.
Dude, wanna hurt Mace? Are you serious right now?
Yeah. If you wanna hurt Mace. Oh, the Becky skit? Hey, Becky.
Look.
Come to the floor. Look. This is Mace.
Here's why I'm laughing at you.
That shit's fire.
Look, Mace's album, I thought when it came out, it captured the shiny suit era, the bad boy era. Everything that it was supposed to be, it captured. I think that is very true, and it captured a great moment in time. Classic? Mm-mm. 24 Hours to Live, incredible song. But there are some cringy moments on that album. But
like what? Okay, there's some shit that does not hold up in 2020. But, I mean, just some shit that's questionable you can't play in public in 2020. Looking at Me was hilarious. I really like Take What's Yours with DMX.
Love You
Mad
So?
Rapper interlude. Oh, ooh, Mace, I love you so.
Really?
That shit was fire.
That's a classic?
Oh, yeah, God. That shit was fire. All right. Oh, man, the back. Once it hits Feel So Good, What You Want, the phone conversation. Cheat On You is the joint with Jay, which is incredible.
Cheat On
I
You.
I need to be with Monifa, which is completely, completely banned in 2020. Like, you can't play that anywhere because that shit is just ruthless. On our last show, we talked about Vince McMahon painting a 19-year-old into a love story. This shit takes that to another level. Song is dope, though. Wanna Hurt Mace? And then Jealous Guys is the best, one of the best outros in hip-hop. You're hard pressed to end an album better than Jealous Guy.
This is
the
not
no a- puff hits and then takes a breath. It keeps going. That
yeah,
shit has
it's funny
tears, fam.
It's not a like, classic.
That shit is a classic shiny suit era album.
Yeah.
I will die on that hill. Mace Feels So Good as a classic
I
album.
I will plant a flag on where you passed away because that's not going to be. I will never die on the Mace Hill. Did you like Blinky Blink?
I did not like Blinky. I knew Blinky Blink. He was a nice person. But no, I did not like Blinky Blink as a rapper.
Like, did you like the Rugrats song, too? Was that your jam?
No, I did not. No, that wasn't
with Maya?
Me. With Maya? I mean, Maya killed it, but it wasn't for me.
You sure?
Yeah.
Because, like, a lot of this Mace album was kind of, okay. Listen, man, it's not a classic
Blinky Blink, Cardan was cool. Yeah, the whole crew.
All right. What's your last one? Because that's ridiculous.
And the last one, I should have saved that one for last. Just blew the doors off this shit. But the last one, which I'm sure people are going to disagree with, I don't care. It's my list. Game Jesus Piece.
Yeah, no.
I think it's a classic album. It was so different for a Game album. Everything on that could have been a single. I think that. I don't understand where the documentary is, and like the documentary is his best album. The album that I listen to more is Jesus Piece. And I don't think it gets nearly the credit it should have got. Front to back, that shit is good. Like the Ali Boumaye track to open that shit up is crazy what him and 2 Chainz do to that beat. Wild. And every beat on that shit is just filthy. Everything feels big. It's stadium music. Like, whew. You want to get hyped, throw on that album and let it rock.
I mean, look.
That's my shit right there.
Good album.
I could have went with YG, by the way, but I didn't.
See, no. Good album.
That YG debut album was legit.
Your threshold for classics is very thin.
Yours is extremely tough. What you can argue is, but it's classic, so it should be extremely tough.
That's the point, man. I mean, if you sell every painting for $1 million, then it ain't worth shit.
Listen, there's a lot of trash, though. Like, listen, I'm not painting every other album as a classic. There's still maybe 100 classics in 100, 150 in hip-hop history. 150 albums drop every other week. So it's not like there's a large portion of classics.
Yeah. Jesus Piece is a good album, not a classic. Jeezy, I don't like it. Not a classic, but I can see why people like it.
You're going to be hard-pressed arguing that down to a lot of people.
There's just certain albums. When I listen to Outkast, Aquemini, does it come close to that?
No.
There's a lot of albums that don't do that. That's why, like, my ceiling is high. You got to jump. Like, you can't just jump. You need some help to get up there where I put albums. There's just no way I could just give albums that I really like a classic. No.
That's so tough. Because then that's like, I don't know, comparing everything to Omega Okada. Like, yo, no, Omega Okada's five stars. So, like, so Cena Punk can't be five stars? It's not Omega Okada.
But it doesn't have to be. Like, you what, is,
like
no,
when you listen to Quemini, that's tough. What is going to be? You got, like, ten albums. That's
no,
hold
you
up
have to. Like, Illmatic is a feeling. And that can't be achieved again. Good Kid, Mad City is an album that can't be achieved again. Aquemini is an album that cannot be achieved. You cannot take two rappers on this planet and duplicate Aquemini. I can.
How many classics do they have?
Outkast.
Yeah.
Three.
Okay.
I don't think Stankonia.
The
is
first
a classic.
Three.
Yes.
First three.
I don't think Stankonia is a classic. A lot of people will disagree with me.
I don't. I don't either.
I don't think it's a classic.
It's really good. It's borderline. I'll give them three and a possible.
It's a 4.5 album. Like, here's my thing about...
And I don't count Dre's solo.
No, I don't count those.
The solo, but the... Yeah, I don't count those.
Speaker Box, Love Below, I don't count. Here's why I say Stankonia is not a classic. It's a really good album, but I personally think that Goody Mob's first album is better than Stankonia.
That Goody Mob album is legit.
It's incredible.
Like, what are you talking
about? But for a lot of people... But I'm on the fence of calling that album a classic. And because of that, and I don't think Stankonia is better than it, I can't put Stankonia as a classic. And I think Goody Mob's, like, that album is like 4.75. So when we talk about albums that I think are classic, they can't be duplicated. Like, when I listened to Young Jeezy's Thug Motivation, I was just like, I can find another rapper to do this. When I listened to the Game's Jesus piece, there's nothing there that I can't find another rapper to necessarily do. When I listen to Food and Liquor, I go, oh, there's nobody can do this. Not at that particular time.
That's fair.
You know what I'm saying? So for me, when I listen to classic albums, there's a different level. Like Fantastic Volume 2 with Slum Village, nobody was producing like Dilla. Nobody was chopping like Dilla. And I was like, yo, you can't recreate that type of music. Like, you just can't do it. What Little Brother was doing coming out of North Carolina, you can't do it. You just can't. So that's why my threshold, like, with albums that I think are really good, because even Forest Hills Drive, as I listen to it, I'm like, this is a really good album. But somebody else can do this.
That's tough.
Listen, man, is J. Cole really that dope of a lyricist? Like, come on.
Like,
is he?
He's really fucking dope. Like, when you say someone else can do this, four people in his generation could do it. That's not a lot of people. Like, well, when you say someone else can do this, it's like, yeah, Kendrick can do this. Like, you give Kendrick the same beats, but like, he's going to produce a classic.
Well, what I'm saying is Forest Hills Drive is a really good album. But what I'm saying is, it doesn't necessarily, for me, capture a moment in time. That is that, like, it doesn't do that for me.
It captured that moment for Cole in my eyes. To me, that was Cole's breakout. Aha, the talent is here. Like, the first two projects were, oh, he's dope, but what the fuck happened to Mixtape Cole? Or his potential is this. Why isn't he that? Oh, he's boring. I don't like Cole. But this one hit, and it was like, it's when Tracy McGrady stopped being traded, or, you know, he. On Toronto, you're
when
like,
Vince
oh,
Carter
T-Mac.
Left.
Yeah, like, T-Mac, you're really good. But then he gets to Orlando, and you're like, oh, that's... Now you're Trace McGrady to T-Mac. Oh, okay. To me, that was J. Cole's moment of that. It wasn't a moment, per se, in hip-hop. Same thing for me with Wale. It's not a moment in hip-hop, necessarily, and, like, can others duplicate this? It's, this is you reaching your 100% max potential, and it came... And was as good as I thought.
So going on that same little analogy with Tracy McGrady. Is Tracy McGrady a top 20 player all time?
No, not top 20. But if we're talking about top 50, I don't know if he's...
Maybe, right? Maybe.
He's French. Yeah, he's
but
French
that's how I feel about Cole. That's how I look at Cole. I'm like, Cole's a really good rapper. Like, he's really good. But there's nothing that Cole has ever rapped that I was like, this is outstanding. I think it's good. I think Forest Hills Drive is like a near classic. God.
Return to Simba is just fucking amazing to me. To me, I think that's his best song.
What album is that on?
Like, yo, it's on a mixtape.
Yeah, exactly. So look,
hold that against me. Like,
I'm just saying. What I'm saying is Forest Hills Drive, when you say he's reaching his max potential, which I agree with, I think at that point he peaked. Like, he really broke through. But that doesn't make it a classic. That makes it his best work. Doesn't make it a classic, in my opinion.
That's fair.
What, but I can, but with Cole, where I can't see your argument with Mace, with Cole is I was like, I can see that being a debatable classic. Whereas just like Drake's
Mace
nothing,
is the best shiny suit
I don't
ever
care.
Album.
I don't care. Front to back. Stop it.
That you're talking about a moment in hip hop and a culture in hip hop. You can't ignore it just because you disliked it and wanted backpack shit. That it wasn't a huge movement.
Could Mace
in
rap? Could Mace rap? Are you really? Are you gonna really tell? Wait. Are you really gonna tell me this version of Mace, Feel So Good Mace, was a rapper? Now I'm not talking about Murder Mace that was on the mixtapes with Children of the Corn.
Children of Corn Mace.
I'm talking about this version of Mace.
He dumbed it down. It was the shiny suit era. The locks weren't rapping at their highest.
And that wasn't classic, right? That wasn't classic.
No, it wasn't what you got in Jada's solo.
Okay.
Or even Styles P solo, which I think is really
good. What's the genre of music we're talking about? Rap, right? You need to learn how to rap. And Mace was not rapping on that album.
That album's fucking legit.
Okay. Look,
I'm dialed this up. The album's fucking legit.
I will never take the words being a fan of backpack rap as some kind of slander because I like people who know how to rap well.
Me too. Listen, I like that. I also like the balance of some people who don't rap as well but put out good music. I'm okay with having a balance. Yeah.
That happens. But what I'm saying is, like, with J. Cole, I think J. Cole is really good at what he does. But I don't think, personally, that J. Cole is, like, extraordinary when we cut.
Think he's on the level of Cole and Drake.
I think actually him and Drake are very close, but Drake, there's sonically something different about Drake that separates him from everybody. That's just a sonics thing.
High up do you have Kendrick?
I told you, Kendrick. I think Kendrick's far better than Cole.
And at this point, far better than Drake by what you're saying.
Like, because Drake, I look at as he's, I can't even compare Drake to, like, he's a different type of artist. Where it's hard to even compare anybody to him because nobody does what Drake does. The problem with Drake in comparison to somebody like Kendrick and even Cole is Drake lacks weight. And what I mean by that is there's nothing that he really rhymes about that's going to stick to your ribs five years from now. It's going to come right out. J. Cole, on the other hand, will say some things and you'll be like, wow, that resonated with me. Not just on some emotional, I need a girl type of level, but on a social level. Kendrick did that with To Pimp a Butterfly. Kendrick did that with Good Kid, Mad City. But Drake is different. Like, he is the epitome of a pop star in 2020 culture. There's nothing like him right now. There is no person who can make hits like Drake. So I can't compare him to anybody. But Cole, I think, I don't want to say Cole's an overrated rapper. But I don't think that I also
you got dangerously close to saying that. That's kind of like a backhanded compliment.
No, because like, what I'm thinking, there are people that think that Cole's like this amazing rapper. But Cole can't rap better than Lupe.
Few people can.
I'm going to keep going. Is Cole a better rapper than Jadakiss? Is Cole a better rapper than Pusha T?
Yeah, Cole's better than Push.
And he's really a better like rapper than Pusha T?
Correct.
I don't think so.
I think so. And of his era, like, so we're reaching back like 20 years. But I understand we're in the grand scope of things. But even like if you put it into like eras, like we do in boxing, right? Like you put it into eras like 2010 through 2020. Four people of his generation, of his era, can maybe rap better than him. Maybe.
Four people.
Who? Kendrick. Drake, because when Drake gets on his shit, Crit. That's I put Crit above him. That was another one. I put Cole above Wale. Wale's in a conversation.
See, I don't know.
That's about it.
I don't know if I put Cole above Wale.
Oh, and Big Sean is the other debatable one.
Yeah,
I put him above Big Sean.
Well, I put him. I think Big Sean is not that great.
Yeah, I know. I know where you stand on Big Sean.
Yeah.
So, but no, to me, it's those six. In their generation are hands and above everyone else.
I think, when I say this, I don't want people to say I'm saying Cole is whack because he's not at all. Cole is not whack at all. I just think that there's Cole is really good, but he's not great. But he's really good. And that's when you made that Tracy McGrady comparison, I see that. but yeah. I won't say Tracy McGrady is a top 20 player all time.
It's like a Russell Westbrook topic that one time where you're just like, oh, yeah, it's really good. He's not great.
No, like he's not carrying the team. Like, it's just not. Like, look at Russell Westbrook.
Stat stuffing?
He's punching the box, man. Like, the man's not winning rings. He's just not. But I appreciate his engine and his motivation and what he does, but it is what it is. Westbrook ain't getting no goddamn rings. Not with that style.
Cold-blooded. J. Cole is a Russell Westbrook rap.
But he's not the Russell Westbrook because Selfish. Like, I'm not saying Westbrook is selfish, but I think Westbrook is known for taking really bad shots.
Yeah,
and Cole doesn't do that. Like,
so he's the James Harden. Great. So he never wins a championship, but he wins a couple MVPs.
Maybe, yeah. But I think Forest Hills Drive is great. I personally like Born Sinner. I think Cole has great albums. But I think he's right there with Drake when you say Nothing Was the Same. It's like, is it a classic? It's really, really, really close, and some people really do believe it. But I don't think he has an undeniable classic.
Drake has an undeniable classic? Take Care is an undeniable classic.
I see people who don't like Take Care.
Wow.
It happened. And I think
that's crazy.
I think Nothing Was the Same was his best album. I've said this a million times. I think it's a classic that I'll play front to back. But if somebody says it's not a classic because there's no weight on it and there's nothing, he's really not saying a whole lot, I can go, yeah, okay. I can concede that point.
Okay.
Classic albums always have something to say.
Yeah, that's, you would think, a lot of those late 80s,
and we're gonna
early
dead this
90s joints might be a little thin.
We're gonna dead this conversation by Harlem World had nothing to say.
Harlem World is fire. I'll die on that hill. You guys stay tuned. We'll be back after the break. And finally, we're gonna get into some boxing talk because we had a big fight over the weekend. You guys stay right there. We'll be right back. All right, we'll get back to the show in a second, but first, 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical, and Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts.
And now Indeed's new way of matching you with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. 73% of online job seekers in the U.S. visit Indeed each month, according to ComScore. So it's clear Indeed can help get you the quality hire you need. That's why more than 3 million businesses worldwide use Indeed for hiring. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, everybody, we are back and we are talking boxing. So we had a top-ranked card that happened over the weekend, and we'll get to the Katie Taylor fight and everything here in our last segment before we get out of here. We'll close the show with that. But we have to talk about the top ranked card. So, Dre, we had the prelims on ESPN+. I'm covering it. I got to watch the whole thing. So that's from 7:30 to 10 o'clock. Tons of finishes, tons of knockouts. That goes quick in a blink, right? Get to 10 o'clock. People got to wait a half an hour. Why? Because Florida's putting the ass whooping on Arkansas. And the game is super long. All right, people wait until 10:30. They're complaining. We get on at 10:30. Co-main event is up. We have Andrew Maloney versus Joshua Franco. Maloney lost his title to Franco 2 months ago, 3 months ago in the bubble. This is the rematch. Maloney wants the belt back. It wasn't his best performance. Cool. They get in there. Maloney immediately gets to work. Throws 50 jabs in the first round. I think a total of 70 punches. You're like, oh, this shit is going to be good. It's warming up. Both guys are getting loose. They're both letting their hands go. And it's over midway through the second. And that's because Franco's eye swells shut. Like, you can't see shit out of that eye. The ref calls it. And Maloney thinks he earned the TKO. Nope. It is deemed a headbutt. Which means it would be a no contest. Well, thankfully, Nevada State Athletic Commission has replay. Trey, how did they fuck this up?
Yo, I don't know. This was the most absurd use of instant replay I've ever seen in any sport. Because in the NFL, if they're reviewing a touchdown or a fumble or anything, none of this shit takes 30 minutes. And when you usually take 30 minutes, you're probably going to overturn the call. You're looking for evidence to overturn it. Here, Robert Byrd, relation to Adelaide Byrd, two people who just clearly can't see shit right, looked at this replay, along with Bob Bennett of the Nevada State Athletic Commission.
Good old Adelaide Byrd.
After Russell Mora falsely claimed that there was a headbutt, but here, I'll give Russell Mora a little bit of a pass. It's in the heat of the action. Maybe he had a weird angle, and he was like, all right, his eye swelled up real quick. I'm not sure what it was from, so I'm going to deem it as a headbutt. But that's why you have instant replay. You have these people look at this instant replay. Now, obviously, they couldn't hear the commentary team or the however many million people were sitting at home yelling at their TVs, like myself, to see that this was a jab. It was a jab, and there was no headbutt. And Andre Ward and Timothy Bradley and Tess, Bob Arum, every boxing journalist, people who just finished watching the Florida game, the ring girls,
my grandma in Puerto Rico who called me midway through the replay. Yo,
there is nobody who sat there and watched this and was like, that was a headbutt. But then they kept watching the replay. Looking, it's a 6-minute fight. It took 30 minutes to review a 6-minute fight to look for something that wasn't there. And at the end of it all, they deemed it as a no contest. So this poor man, Jason Maloney, traveled from Australia to come to the States, to leave his family at home, to train for a fight, to win a world title. Doesn't get that opportunity because a bunch of old men are inept and can't figure out how to fucking look at a replay.
At all. Technology. I knew it was over once Tess on the call said, well, they're on the phone with our production truck. I was like, oh, it's over. I was like, they don't even got it in front of them. There's no controls. They don't know how to rewind. Like, when you got to call somebody to rewind, it's a wrap. Like, you don't. It reminded me of Zoolander. When they're trying to figure out how to get the files out of the computer. It's in the computer. And they're just like looking around the back of it and like banging on it and shit. That's what it reminded me of. I was like, nothing good is going to come out of this. And it took 30 plus minutes.
And then the other issue is, and listen, I know you work for ESPN, but the production was wild for this show.
People like the production.
No, I'm not talking about liking the actual production. I'm talking about the fact that at some point, somebody needs to say, yo, hurry this shit up. Like, because you waited from the Greer fight and then said, you know what? We're going to wait until this game ends, which some people were pissed at, but I get it because, you know, college football rules. So you wait until the game ends and you go, cool, we're going to roll right into arguably the number one pound for pound fighter in the world. You guys should watch him doing all this promo. That makes sense. But if you're on the East Coast and you just finished watching college football and decided, I'm going to leave the channel right here so I can watch this fight, and then proceeded to watch the fight that you weren't advertised to get because nobody talked about Maloney being the lead-in for this fight. So you leave the channel on. You're like, well, who are these two guys? And you're like, yeah, I'm going to watch this fight. It's like, ooh, his eyes swirled up. Cool. Oh, man, they're going to call the fight. And then you have to wait 30 minutes for them to decide this? I'm going to sleep. If I'm not a hardcore boxing fan, I'm out.
Mind you, it's already like midnight on the East Coast.
Dude.
While they're trying to do this. So it was
as long. A person who works at the Zone and had to sit through the nightmare known as Canelo Kovalev as we waited for the Diaz-Masvidal fight to end, and there's that...
To me, that was way worse, by the way. That's egregious.
Dude, the way the decision... Like, that was a fucking nightmare. But that was way worse because we were waiting on a fight to end. But we were also waiting on a game to end with ESPN, but then we had to wait through a replay. This was inexcusable. That part's not ESPN's part. But I feel like somebody at some point would be like, hey, Robert Byrd, Bob Bennett, we got a fucking fight to put on here.
Yeah, we're live.
We have nothing to fill this time with.
You know what? Review this. Let's bring out the next fight. And middle. If we got to announce it in the middle of the next fight, we will. And be like, hey, they've come to
a decision. Yo, y'all should have, like, ESPN should have ran.
Clear the ring.
They should have ran all their packages. Should have sang the national anthems and be like, we'll get back to you with a decision later. Because clearly, this fight is over. It's not like the fight can continue. It's not like they're going to go, oh, was it headboard or wasn't head, but resume action. The fight's over. At that point, you should say, you know what? Let's get Terrence Crawford out here with Kell Brook, and then we'll let the viewers know what was decided.
I think the problem is no one knew it was going to take 30 minutes. You always thought, like, oh, okay, the decision's going to come back. Oh, okay, the decision's going to come back. And they just never came back for 30 minutes. Like, it's ridiculous to then just get it wrong. But I will say, this is probably the best thing that could have happened to Andrew Maloney. He beats the shit out of him, wins the title. All right, cool, whatever. People just think, all right, yay, it's time for Bud. Him getting robbed did more for his profile and his image than anything else could have done. Now go back out, book a trilogy, and get your belt back. But now people will watch because you did get robbed. See, and now they know your name.
See, I don't know. It sounds good in theory, right? It becomes a headline. It becomes a story. But when this fight is finally booked, the people are going to go, oh, the fight that I fell asleep on? Because it wasn't like it was a good fight.
To be fair, they didn't fall asleep on the fight. They was feeding them punches. They didn't fall asleep on the fight. They fell asleep
on the replay. But that's what I'm saying. Like, so I don't think I watched 6 minutes of action. I watched one dude beat up the other dude and get called wrong. Why do I need to see this rematch? That's what a lot of people are going to think, because it wasn't like it was competitive and this shit happened. Maloney was giving him hands.
I think people were going to say, oh, he's robbed. I want to see him. Okay, let's see him beat the hell out of him and actually get his title. At least they know his name to tune back in.
They'll forget it.
People didn't know his name. They'll forget it. Yeah, they got to play heavy, like, promo-wise. We got to play heavy at ESPN on the, oh, he was robbed last time. Jog people's memory with that, because at least they now know it. And then, anyway, so we wait another 30 minutes. After a six-minute fight, we wait 30 minutes to find out the decision. He loses. He's robbed. Gotcha. Now it's time for the main event. And we get full WCW pyro. Like, Sting is coming from the rafters. Lightning, thunder, craziness. Kell Brook comes out. I forgot what song he even walked out to. I don't know. Something newer. Kell Brook comes out, comes to ring. All right, cool. Crawford comes out. They do the theatrics. They stand there. People like this straight. People said it was very well set up. And then he comes out. Shaka Khan.
I liked it.
Listen, I know you like it. But we're not the audience he has to win over.
Well,
not that. Sooner or later.
Who could he possibly have come out with and people were like, cool? Because
I don't know, man. Like, but I tell you this, like, there's a reason why Gervonta is a pretty big star as a black athlete. It's because he hangs out with fucking the baby and Lil Baby and whoever out, Lil Durk or whoever out, Lil Summer or another. And they walk him to the ring, Lil Uzi Vert. His last, like, they walk him to the ring, they rap, they're on his IG. All this shit, like, this is why people kind of know of him, and then the knockouts help a ton. Bud's not even trying that. Like, listen, I like the Shaka Khan song, but this is not going to win you any fans.
I don't think, I wouldn't care. If my entrance is the one thing that's going to deter people, yeah, I'm good. I'm going to do what the fuck I want. And that's what he did. Because who was really talking about the entrance? Let's be honest. From most boxing entrances, who really talks about them the next day unless they're really spectacular? Like, Floyd Mayweather would do really spectacular things that we remember.
Mayweather, yeah, exactly. But people rapped him out. He dressed like different characters. People talked about it. You, sir, you had Big E.
I did.
Do a Shaw Porter one.
Yes.
Do you know the importance of entrances? How are you downplaying an entrance? You know the importance of this. And I understand it's not Bud, but sooner or later, Bud, if you want to force the hand, if you want to be a bigger star, you got to meet halfway. You can't just be like, yo, market me as I am. Okay, who are you? Just country kid from Nebraska. Like, all right, Bud, let's give us something. Like, these little touches go along.
Yeah, but what if you don't like that shit?
Then that's fair. Then you come out of Shaka Khan and you just put on a fucking thing. But in the end, if you'd never reach superstar status, not that that is even his goal. I really think Bud's goal is to be the best of this generation and see where he falls all time. And he's more concerned with getting the fights that will make sure he can say I was the best than being the biggest superstar. I think his ambition is to be Floyd Mayweather. Unlike many people, you know, young or around his age and younger. I don't think he wants to have his own money team. He's not Adrian Broner.
He's not interested in that. So, like, I thought coming out to Shaka Khan was something that Bud Crawford does. I don't think any entrance would have made him a bigger star. Because who?
I mean, listen, I saw the Wilder and Fury entrance. That fucking Wilder entrance was great before we learned that he blamed it on the 40-pound suit. But when he came out, oh, that shit was dope.
Yeah, but all we remember is what? He lost.
Look, I mean, Bud wasn't going to lose, but we'll get to that. But I'm saying the added touch, like Tyson Fury coming out on the throne with the crown. And before then, Tyson Fury did the Rocky entrance. And then before then, it was like Mexican Independence Day or Cinco de Mayo. And he came out and he was the Spanish Gypsy King. He came out with the sombrero.
That fits his personality.
Okay, but he knows you got to do little touches. Like, but there's something in Bud's personality that he could bring.
Not that. I mean,
Bud plays Call of Duty all day. Do a fucking Call of Duty themed entrance.
Yeah, sure. Like,
do the Black Ops, drag someone through the gulag, and then fucking come out with the crazy Call of Duty theme. People, that would have went viral.
Yeah, but that's part of who you are.
You gotta give me something. Give me something.
I agree that
I'm not telling the man to TikTok dance, but
I agree that Bud Crawford has to do things to win people over, and I think that's a personality thing. But like, to be critical of a walkout, nah, I'm good.
A lot can go into a walkout, but nonetheless, we get into the ring. It's fight time. So, talking about a little bit of the X's and O's of this, the sweet science. Bud Crawford comes out first two rounds. Orthodox stance, as if people been listening to the show, if you don't know, Bud Crawford is one of the best switch fighters damn near of all time. Like, it's what he does. It's flawless how he can switch between stances. He decides to come out in an orthodox stance, and we see in the first two rounds, Kell Brook loves that, and he's feeding Bud the jab, even though Bud has the much longer reach. Kell is finding a home for the jab, and Bud has no answers for it through the first two rounds.
That's how you saw it? I didn't see it that way.
How'd you see it?
I saw it as...
And Bud's a slow starter, yeah. I get it. But
I saw it as Bud was... He gave Kell a look, which was opposite of the look he usually gives when he opens up a fight. And he took his time to figure out what Brook was doing from that particular stance. Now, I'll take it a step further. Kell Brook doesn't fight with a plan B. A lot of fighters don't fight with a plan B. They kind of put their cards on the table and they don't give you a lot of tricks in like the 6th, 7th, and 8th rounds. Terrence Crawford's much different in that regard, where he doesn't give you much, and that's what makes Floyd Mayweather great and Andre Ward great. They don't give you much early. And then little wrinkles start coming out here and there because what they're doing is they're adjusting to what you're doing. And I think that's what always will make the best fighters in the world. They'll look at you, nothing in the corner at that point. There might be little things that says, oh, he's giving a tell. He's like shaking his hand before he throws it. Something shit like that. But for the most part, Crawford was looking at that because there was nothing that Kell Brook was necessarily threatening with. But I think Terrence was just kind of looking at, okay, he's going to work this jab. And that's his game plan. And I'm going to give him three rounds to work that jab. I'm going to switch stances and see if he still commits to that jab. And what did Kell Brook do?
He ran away from the jab.
He briefly.
He stopped throwing
it. But then he came back to it. And when he came back to it, what was Bud doing? Because now we're talking about those later rounds. Because Bud teased that, going over that jab with that right hand the entire time when he switched stances.
Oh, yeah.
He kept teasing it. Yeah. Every time Kell Brook feinted the jab, he'd paw at it over the top. And then,
yep. That was the John Jones. Just touch their hand. And just keep your hand out there and paw on top of it so you can feel it as soon as it moves.
Yeah. Bam, and next time you talk to Bud, ask him this because I want to know if I'm wrong. What I think Bud was doing was at this point, now he was seeing that, well, Kell's going to stick to this, and I'm going to see how he reacts by me going over the top of his jab. And I think what he noticed was he's not reacting. Yeah, like instead,
he's not
like instead of him completely abandoning the jab and doing something else, he didn't have anything else. So for that for the duration of the last half of that third round, Bud realized, like, if I stay in the stance, the only thing he can possibly do is go back to what he was doing with his jab. And in the fourth round, what did he do? He went right back to his jab.
Back to the jab.
Bud, who had been playing with going over the top with his right hand the entire time, kept showing him it. And Kell did not react to it any different. So then finally, Kell was like, I'm committing to this jab. I'm going to try to throw a right hand behind it. Too late. He walked him right into the right hand, ended the damn fight. So I don't think there was anything that Kell Brook necessarily did that was offsetting to Bud. I think Bud was looking at it like, I can't believe he's still doing this shit. Because from that point, because I said, and I think you might have said this too, I was like, it could be competitive, quote unquote, for the first few rounds because Kell's a good fighter. But once Bud figures it out, it's over. And I thought it was going to go 9. But I think he was so surprised by Kell's commitment to that jab. He was like, this motherfucker don't have a plan B.
I thought it was going the distance or it was going 3. I was closer to the 3.
It's just
because, Bud said as much, like, yo, I'm going to go out there, first 3 rounds, feel him out. But even then, it was like, once Kell got hit flush once, it didn't look like he wanted to be in there.
Mm-mm.
Like, and I understand, you didn't see it coming, right? Like, those always hurt the most. You didn't get your wits about you. And Bud is the wrong one to need a breather against. So he hits you and you stumble halfway across the ring from a short right. And then Kell at that point, though, when he's looking at the ref, it's just like, I don't want to be here. Like, kind of has, like, PTSD from getting his eyes broken, it looked like.
Well, see, remember when I told you?
Like, where he was like, here we go again.
I told you. I was like, this has nothing to do with his orbital bones being fine. This is a mental thing. Now I'm getting hit, and how is my body reacting to this? I don't like it. I know what it feels like to lose, and I don't want to be here anymore. And that's what happened. Because he sold y'all on all that shit. I'm rebuilt, and he looked fantastic at the weigh-in. But I never said, the one thing I won't say, and I won't accept from a lot of people, is like, Kell Brook is completely washed up, and he's a bum. No. Kell Brook can still beat a lot of solid 47-pounders. And I can't find too many people that will be able to get him out of there the way that Crawford did. But when he got into the trouble, his mind went back to the 5th round with Golovkin and the 11th round with Arrow. And his mind was like, I don't like this. And I don't know how to get out of this. Because it's not one of those things where Kell Brook was in trouble and fought his way back into the fight. Once he was in trouble, the fight was over. And Terrence Crawford got him in trouble. Kell Brook recognized this muscle reaction was like, I don't like this feeling. And he didn't know how to fight his way out of it. And Bud, arguably one of the nastiest finishers in boxing. There's no, oh, you know, I'm not going to play with my food. He doesn't play with his food. He licks the plate clean. And Kell was food. That was a wrap.
Food indeed, because once Bud had him hurt, and you just saw it inside, Bud wasted no time getting that finish. No time at all. And I think that's the best quality of Bud Crawford. Mind you, his punching power is insane for a guy his size at 147. But his freakishly long arms will help that. His punching power is crazy, but his mentality to finish is like none other.
I mean, I said it. There's a mean streak in Bud Crawford that other fighters don't possess. Other fighters want to win. Bud wants to hurt you. And that, look, we'll talk about this real quick because I got to mention this because I said it on Twitter and I got a lot of shit about it. After the fight, there was the video of Bud immediately going to play ping pong after the fight was over. The man had just been in a fight and goes to play ping pong. And you have told me about how competitive Bud is. I've heard about this. And they've started to play into this a little bit more about how competitive he is. Andre Ward mentioned on the broadcast, there's nothing that Bud is not going to argue with you about. He's going to try to win at everything. And I said, there's a really frightening competitive nature that Bud Crawford possesses that I can only compare to few. And one of those few is Michael Jordan. People's like, you're calling him to Michael Jordan? No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is what Bud possesses is this thirst for competition and being the best.
Yep.
And other fighters win a fight and they'll be like, it's like an adrenaline jump. And they'll be like, I just want to chill. And I hear fighters say this all the time. For Bud to go into immediately competitive game of ping pong with somebody, I would hate to be his friend.
Yo, you got to see this man play chess. I love playing chess. This motherfucker, again, it's, you're not far off when you say it's Jordan S. If you beat him in one game of chess, you ain't leaving for like 3 hours. Because it's not like he got to beat you once. He got to beat you like 5 games in a row to prove it was a fluke. Like, it's that level of competitive.
And that's like, in basketball terms, that's why I always said Jordan and LeBron were like different. Like, LeBron can turn it on and off, and some people say LeBron doesn't have the killer instinct. LeBron, like, nobody ever said, I never said LeBron doesn't want to win. But Jordan wants to win in the worst way possible, where it is vengeance, where it is mean, where it is evil, where he will berate you, he will degrade you, he will do everything. Like, you've heard, if anybody's listened to the stories that other players would tell, like Kevin Garnett, the story that he told where I can't remember who was playing defense on Jordan that game and was like, I got you. And Jordan only had like 4 points in the first half and he lit him up for like 33 in the second half and didn't say anything and just looked at him. And then Kevin was like, we're fucked. That's what Terrence Crawford possesses. He has that innate ability to be like, I'm not losing. And if I do lose, I'm going to be so angry about losing that it's going to make it worse for you. That doesn't mean he's the most skilled fighter. I just don't see fighters with that kind of mean streak in them. Like, I don't like to lose. But at a certain point, I'll back down from an argument with my wife. Right? I don't think Bud backs down with an argument from anybody. And then he can whoop your ass, too? It's a weird combination, and it's frightening.
I mean, it's not the guy to get a fist fight. Like, they were talking on the broadcast and telling those stories, and I think it was part of Kriegel's story. But his mom says, like, I paid kids in the neighborhood to fight him and beat him up, and he'd never lose. She said, I was putting up, like, $10 for anyone who could beat him, and no one would beat him up. No one could. His mother was betting against him and not winning. His level of competition forever has just been insane. So now when I look and I say, okay, what's next for him? I'm not sure if I see someone beating him. Because I don't know if he knows how to lose.
I still think Errol Spence is a huge problem for him. In a literal sense. Because Errol's a big guy. And I don't think...
Reach is the same, but hits like a truck.
Yeah, so does Errol. I mean, he broke Kell's orbital bone. Like, so, okay, we'll just get into what's next. What's next is simple to me. Either Bob Arum makes these fights, or he needs to let Bud go. That's it. There is nothing for Bob to do under the Top Rank umbrella. It's a waste of time.
Oh, I agree. I think the guy's 33. You take what you got to take. Even if you got to build in rematch clauses to get Bud what you think he may deserve on a rematch on the back end, then you do that. But if Spence wants to start 60-40, you got to give him 60-40.
I think you just got to do it. But you don't even. Here's how I look at it. I don't even think you really need to do that. It's like, I think you go to Heyman and you say, look, any of these four motherfuckers, give them to me. I don't care who it is. Porter, Thurman, Garcia, Spence, winner. I don't care. Give one of them to me now. And if you say, 60-40 for Spence, fine. I'm going to build my own cachet by beating up all your guys in succession. Because the deal needs to be, I want them all in order. Like, it's either Spence, Thurman, Porter or Porter, Spence, Thurman, any combination of them, those are the fights that I need next. I need every single one of them. I don't care which one you give them to me. That's the only way this should be played. Because any fight, like if Terrence Crawford goes out there, let's just say he beats the shit out of Keith Thurman. Let's just say he does that. It's going to be real hard for people to digest that Spence won't take that fight. They won't accept it. And that's what puts the pressure on that fight to happen. But Terrence has to fight people that matter. Like if Terrence went out there and beat up Sean Porter, let's just say he knocked out Sean Porter in seven. You think people going to... That's you think anybody's going to listen to Errol Spence saying, nah, he ain't ready for me? Like, you think anybody's going to want to hear that? No. But the only way this can happen is if Bob Arum goes across the street and says, listen, Spence, no, any of them. Give me one of them. And then the last one, and I got a lot of shit about this, is like, it ain't going to be Manny Pacquiao. And people are like, yes, it is. Manny Pacquiao don't duck from nobody. Y'all not paying attention. Manny ain't here to fight the best in the world anymore. He's on his way out.
I think Bob is going to give Manny a lot of reasons to take
this. I don't. Because you know where the money's coming from? The Middle East. You know who Manny can fight in the Middle East? A trash can, a chain link fence.
Yeah,
a chair. Like he literally will make the same money fighting an inanimate object as he would Bud Crawford. So I think if you're Manny's team, and especially Freddie Roach, Freddie is the one who really doesn't want that fight. You look at the Conor McGregor fight and be like, I sell more in the Conor McGregor fight than I ever would with a Bud Crawford fight. Ever.
Yep.
And honestly, the more winnable fight in boxing is the Mikey Garcia fight. And you still make the same money. I don't think there's any reason that Pacquiao might in his head be like, yeah, I want to do this. But his team is going to be like, no, we don't want you to go out on your seal. This might not be a winnable fight. If it was, they would have made this fight years ago.
I agree. I think it's going to happen.
I don't.
I think Pacquiao is the focus now. I still think Mikey has the inside track on Pacquiao because it's a more winnable fight. Defend the belt and then figure it out. But I don't think the money is the same. I honestly don't. I don't think the Mikey Garcia money is the same. I know the sales aren't the same. I don't think he sells as much on pay-per-view against Mikey.
Dude, the Middle East is paying for this fight.
Oh, yeah. No, I understand that.
And.
But there's more money to be made.
Al Heyman. And Al Heyman.
I'm not even. That's it. I understand. I'm also not sold that Heyman and Mikey go to the Middle East for that fight, and that's the fight the Middle East pays for. I think they pay for Conor McGregor, which is more of a spectacle. And I think Bob can talk them into paying for Terrence Crawford. I'm not sure they're paying necessarily for a Mikey Garcia fight. But I know they want Pacquiao, right? So the argument's like, we just want to see Pacquiao fight. But I think there's also levels.
There's not. Here's why. Who's Manny Pacquiao advised by? Al Heyman, not Bob Arum.
I know he just signed with Conor's crew too, so I don't know. He has like a million different.
But Bob doesn't have any leverage in this. Manny left Bob for a reason.
Oh yeah.
So I know, like, because Spence wants to Pacquiao. You think Spence is going to fight Pacquiao? I don't. I don't think if it's Spence, if it ain't Spence, it ain't going to be Bud. I
still say Mikey. Mikey's the inside track. If not, if he goes Conor. Like, say Pacquiao says, fuck it, I'm just fighting Conor. I think he gives up the belt. Like, I don't know how you keep the belt for 2 years and not fighting.
I don't think, like, Manny don't give a shit about that belt.
Yeah, I think he just vacates the belt and says, fuck it, he don't give a fuck about a belt. Takes the payday. And then that's where Bob would have to say, yo, Bud, you're going to, we need Bud to challenge for this belt. And then PBC says, okay, but we're either going to give Porter or Thurman as the challenger on our end. And that's how you make the fight happen. Manny has to vacate that belt.
Yeah.
Now it's like, okay, cool. Now they're fighting for a unified champion to see who then fights Errol Spence. Now we're making
sense. I just don't think there's any scenario that Bob can pitch Bud Crawford to Al Heyman for a Manny Pacquiao fight. And Manny Pacquiao's team is like, yeah, we want to split some of this with that side. I just don't see that happening. Especially in a fight that Manny's probably going to lose. But I see like Mikey, because Mikey is not going to ask for the same amount of money. That's clear. Like, if Bud fights, they're going to ask for some money. Mikey's not. He just wants to fight. Yeah. So, I think...
I mean, again, you beat him, you just elongate the inevitable. You beat him, and then you fight Connor, and then you just not... You're not going to fight anyone again.
Yeah, I think... Manny's 40.
He doesn't have
Manny's
to.
Done. It's yeah, a wrap. Like, Manny has... Beating Thurman and beating Broner, and like everybody should know this by now, Broner was never a real threat. He was the perfect fight for Manny Pacquiao. Keith Thurman was also perfect because he had so much time off, and everything about Manny has to do with timing, and Keith's timing was out of whack for that fight. There was nothing he could do with Manny. Fighting somebody like Terrence Crawford, he'll get beat up.
Listen, dare to be great, Manny. Dare
He's already been great.
But yeah, no, if you can't make the fights, then yeah, you might have to go. Because you can't, just realistically, you can't pay Bud $4 to $5 million every fight against people don't know. Because you're not making
it. That's stupid, man. Just, you got to figure it out. Make a deal. Shit or get off the pot. We're at that point.
I agree. I think it could work, though. If it's not Manny, I think he can stay with Top Rank and get one of those other pieces you were talking about. And start forcing Spence's hand. That or you vacate. Like, or Spence says, fuck it, I'm tired of waiting, goes up. I don't know. But I don't see that happening either before those two fight. I genuinely think they're competitive and they want to fight.
I do too. Other.
Yeah, so I think they want to make it happen for each other. They're just trying to figure out, okay, when does this make the most sense?
And it makes the most sense now.
Immediately after this, if fans were allowed and like we could say they're fighting in May and there's no Rona or there's like a Rona vaccine, you sign them both up right now after these next fights. But I don't think you can say
that's the hard part. Without fans, it's always going to be the biggest hurdle.
Yeah, because then you want them to stay kind of active. They got to defend a belt. Then
and you don't want to do Crawford Spence in the Middle East, right? Because they don't give a shit about either of them. Manny Pacquiao, global superstar. Crawford Spence? Yep. No thanks. Keep that shit in America.
That shit should be in Dallas.
Stadium. Yeah, but you gotta you want to have fans. So I can see that's the only argument. That's why I say you do like if you're doing Errol Spence versus Danny Garcia on pay-per-view, you can do Terrence Crawford and Keith Thurman on pay-per-view.
I'm not mad at that. Yeah, like well, that's something they gotta figure out. But I think one of those guys are definitely in the future for Bud Crawford. I don't see him now at 33, about to be 34 years old. I don't see him taking a fight against anyone else at this point. I think he's done. I think he's done with the mandatories and the bullshit. No more Kavalaskis.
Yeah.
I think it's done. Like, is this with Top Rank or is this without them? But there's no other options. Yep. So let's hit our last break when we come back. Just a couple minutes left in the show, about 10, 12 minutes. But want to talk some women's boxing. So we're going to take a quick break. Be right back with that. We'll get right back to the show in a second, but first, the wait is finally over. Football is back. You might not be able to be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads to totals to teams, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, divisions, and championship futures all day, every day.
Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
All right, we are back, and it's a quick wrap and end to the show. But I wanted to give women's boxing some love because, honestly, they deserve it. So, Katie Taylor main evented a card on DAZN earlier on Saturday that had some really good women's fights. You mentioned Harper before. I think it was earlier this show.
Yeah.
But you mentioned the Harper fight. I thought she looked great, and she has a killer instinct in the co-main. And I think her and getting on the mic afterwards and calling out Michaela Mayer, who is signed to Top Rank, who is also young and full of potential, I think that fight is going to be great.
I agree.
And Harper's an animal in there, by the way. She is just The hell with defense. The hell with I'm going in there to slug it out.
Yeah, that's what we need. Like, we need some people like that in women's boxing. We need some people who don't give a shit and they're willing to go to war. Fuck the sweet science. Let's do this. We only got 2 minute rounds. I ain't got time to waste.
I got time for that other shit, which is impressive because Harper stops people. 2 minute rounds. You give her 1 minute rounds. She's getting people out of there. So I was like, damn, well, this is going to make a good fight. She broke her hand, has to heal up from that. But at least even broken bones are like 6 weeks, 8 weeks. It's just, you know, when a boxer starts breaking their hands, it worries me. Especially with her style, it's like, oh, you don't want to see that happen too much. But I'm really looking forward to that. Hopefully her and Mayer can get together and unify the belts, and it'll be very exciting. Eddie Hearn at the end of it said he wants her to be undisputed too. That goes through Michaela Mayer now.
Definitely.
I think she just got a title, so that's going to be very exciting. Katie Taylor in the main event. To me, Katie's easiest fight as of late.
Yeah.
Because Katie usually picks some very, very tough people to fight. But I always looked at this fight as a stepping stone to a bigger one. And I think that bigger one is Amanda Serrano.
Yeah, if they can get the business down for the Serrano fight, that's really the fight to make. And
Just pay Serrano. She said they offered her a pay cut.
Yeah, that was a whole pandemic thing. They needed to figure that part out because Serrano, she is a multiple division world champion. She is a damn good fighter.
Seven, yes, I believe. She's approaching Pacquiao.
Like she's the person that Katie Taylor needs to fight next. You can't really bullshit with this one. You got to do it. And to Katie's credit for this fight, she was really trying to make a statement by knocking Miriam Gonzalez the hell out. Gutierrez. She was trying to knock her out. She couldn't do it, but the fact that she tried means that she knows what she's here to do. She's trying to make a statement.
She dropped her like twice. Yeah, or something.
Gutierrez ended up being tough. That's all. But all in all.
And again, Katie's same way. She'll throw, and she is not scared to get hit back.
And she's an Olympian, but she can fight. So it's the fight to make. It's the fight to make now. Do it.
Easy. And I have both of them in my top five pound for pound. In the women's division. And it's great. We have this list. I see it brought up on Twitter all the time now. Shout out to Clarissa Shields, who uses it all the time to just drop it on people. Like, oh, I'm not dope? Bomb. I'm rated number one, bitches. So she crushes it on Twitter with that. But I obviously vote for the pound for pound list on ESPN. But I never asked you who's your pound for pound.
That's Clarissa.
In terms of women, like, top.
It's Clarissa. Okay. It's Clarissa Shields.
So Katie is not passing her.
Not if she beats Serrano, then I might put her past her. But right now it's Clarissa. Two-time Olympians, gone over the trans, hasn't been in a close fight at all. Katie Taylor arguably lost to Delphine Persoon the first time.
It was damn near a draw.
Right. So it was two really, really close fights. And I'm not saying that it makes Katie Taylor whack. I'm just saying Clarissa's level of dominance compared to Katie's difference maker. But if Katie can beat...
Oh, sounds like my case for butt over Canelo.
But
all right, I'll continue.
The problem is Clarissa doesn't have the resume that Canelo has. So there...
Oh, I don't know. She was the fastest to three-division champion ever. She beat the chick whose wig came off.
Thank you.
Fight.
If that's
the
her name, they're in...
I know her name. No, I know her name.
All I'm saying is there's no, like, the resume doesn't stack up because there isn't really a resume there to stack up with. If Katie Taylor beats Amanda Serrano, who's a multiple division world champion and definitely on the pound for pound list.
Oh, that's easily the best.
Exactly.
Win. But when you look, I was thinking about Cruz Dizern. Her overweight flew up. Sorry, she got three names. I forgot. And then the Christina Hammer fight.
Yeah, Christina Hammer wasn't that really that. But my point is that.
But that was a big fight.
It was.
I mean, that was a big name for her to just come out.
But that's my point. Like, everybody they put in front of her, because Francine Dizern Cruz is a world champion and a really good fighter, and Clarissa pretty much dusted her off. Katie Taylor having a problem with Delphine Persoon, who a lot of people were like, Katie Taylor should walk over, had two tough fights with her, is the reason why I can't put Katie above Clarissa yet. If she were to dog Amanda Serrano, then it becomes a strength of schedule thing. But we're not there yet, because neither of them have a really strong schedule. All we're looking at is a bunch of eye tests.
I mean, you got to do that for a while.
You
right?
do. We're like, just really establishing this boxing, division. Yeah, right. We're establishing women's boxing.
Yeah.
So it's going to be tough like this for a while.
So you have that. I struggle with, I put Amanda Serrano at three. But Jessica McCaskill in that win over Cecilia is hard to ignore.
I can't ignore it. Like, she looks so damn good in that fight. So it's tough. Again, women's boxing, man. Like, a lot of people are just getting to know a lot of these women that are fighting. Yeah. And it's not.
And thankfully, they're fighting each other, though. Like, it's starting to work out where it's
they're just not wasting any time. They're like, all right, let's just do this. Like, whoever needs to fight, let's fight. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano needs to happen now because the public needs to know who these women are.
Yeah. And then, again, if Serrano doesn't get the Taylor fight, I don't mind if she gets a McCaskill fight.
She's got options.
It looks like, Brekus is going to get the rematch, though.
Yeah.
But she can fight at featherweight there. Like, let's do that. She has plenty of options. And Cecilia looks good. And I don't think she was washed in that last fight. There's a lot of good fighters on the women's side. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. It's going to be great. Wanted to give Katie Taylor her just due, though. And I think there's a lot of great options down at those weights. You know, 126, 130, 135, to me, is stacked at the women's route. I don't know necessarily what's in the future of Clarissa Shields.
I don't either.
Because it's a little thinner up there. It's rare. It's more chance for people to catch her on pound for pound than it is for her to separate. The one thing I want to talk about before we get out of here is Eddie Hearn said there's a legit possibility that Katie Taylor could fight Cyborg in a boxing match. Good or bad for where she is in her career?
Who, Katie Taylor?
Katie Good. Taylor, not Cyborg. Good. Cyborg.
Yes.
Really? Because she's still in legit boxing matches. That's like, true. It's to go and do an MMA match now kind of takes away from your relevance.
Why. If Katie Taylor fights four of these women, she's done. There's nobody left. She's got time. So this could fill some time. Because Katie Taylor's already fought twice during the pandemic. She's busy.
Yeah.
She can go out there, just stay busy and beat Chris Cyborg, get her name up even higher, and headline a big event, and people are in the building to watch her fight Amanda Serrano, whoever it is. She can do that, McCaskill, whoever. But it's not going to hurt her if she's staying busy. If she was like Gary Russell Jr. and fought once a year, then I say, no, don't do it. But if she's going to fight three times a year, I don't see her fighting four. Three times a year, and Cyborg's one of those fights, sure.
It shouldn't be next, but yeah, sure. Why not? I don't think Cyborg wins that fight. I love Ariel Helwani. He tweeted, though, he was just like, a high-ranking MMA official says he thinks Cyborg can beat Katie Taylor. I'm like, Cyborg can go in there and get the brakes beat off. She thought Nunez's hands were crazy. There's levels to this game. So that'll be interesting to see. But yeah, I was thinking that. And Cyborg's huge compared to Katie. I was like, damn, can't even fight someone in her weight class? Yeah. Like, it's not going to be good. But listen, to each their own. Eddie Hearn does this. He puts YouTubers on the card. So what can I say? He's doing a great job with the women's division, though. So kudos to them. Shout out to women's boxing. It's been a great show for us. Tons of hip-hop in this show, which is always fun. And then, of course, wrapped it up talking boxing. Hopefully, you guys enjoyed it. Hopefully, you guys are staying safe and Rona-free out there. Make sure you follow us on social media at @CornerPodcast_ on Twitter. On Instagram, it is @CornerClub4Life. You can follow me at Kel Dansby, him at Andreas Hale on all platforms. Shout out as well to Blue Wire, the network. Shout out to the sponsors. Dre, before we get out of here, pre-orders are open for your book. Yep. The Old Man in Print. Make sure, where can people find this? Where can we?
Well, you have the link.
Book?
It's Gumroad, which is the other publisher with Halfway Books. So link goes is already going to be live by the time you listen to this. And yeah, man, please. I don't ask for much, but I could use the support because we want to prove that this little project that we're doing with Say Serrano is going to yield some results and get some support from the people. So, Corner Club, putting up the bat signal. Support your man. I got a book. And then if this does well, I'll have another.
Yes, we're going to support this one so then we can get the life and times of Andreas Hale, a young man growing up in the streets of Las Vegas.
All right, we got to go.
Listen, we're funding the book, people. We're funding the book. Once again, thanks everyone as always for listening. We got one more show this week. It is our MMA show. That'll be coming out later. Make sure you guys check for that. Until then, though, we're out.